Now it's my pleasure to welcome you to the session, Health Insurance and Get the Facts. I am co-presenting with Dr. Elizabeth Younger. She is an assistant professor of pediatrics at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. She's also a member of the IDF Nurse Advisory Committee. You're our chair, I believe. Yes. Okay. So I'm, like I said, the patient advocate manager with IDF. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Younger as well. So today we're going to go through and talk about the basics of health insurance, and there's so much that's going on and constantly changing, especially with the ACA and the implementation of it, as you know, we're into it a couple years now. But first we're going to talk about the types of insurance plans that we have out there. We have what is our private plans, our individual policies that are purchased through either your state health insurance marketplace or outside of the marketplace. These are also the employer-sponsored plans. Public insurance plans would be your Medicare, any state Medicaid or children's health programs, VA benefits, and TRICARE. The Affordable Care Act, ACA as everybody knows it as, gave everyone rights and protections. No insurer can limit or deny benefits to anyone due to a pre-existing condition. There were also lifetime and annual caps eliminated on all plans, and then no out-of-pocket costs for preventative services such as your screenings for breast cancer, cholesterol, diabetes, depression, immunizations, and coverage cannot be canceled due to any new diagnosis or health issue. Also with the ACA, you are able to insure your child or dependent up to the age of 26. The dependents are not required to live in the household with you. They do not need to be claimed on your income tax. And the dependent can actually be married. However, fortunately for everyone, you will not have to insure your new daughter-in-law or son-in-law. But most importantly, the big change is that your dependent does not have to be a full-time college student to stay on the insurance plan. Employer-sponsored coverage, out-of-pocket costs. ACA has created these maximum out-of-pocket amounts for individuals and for families. They're going to increase a little bit each year. Currently, in 2015, we're looking at $6,600 for an individual or $13,200 for a family. These employer-sponsored plans may use separate entities for the various benefits that you have. You have prescription, medical, dental, vision, and you may have separate like administrators of those plans. But if you have three different entities that are all included in what's like your medical plan, you have one card and you have vision and you have dental, that amount cannot go beyond these maximum out-of-pocket limits. They cannot exceed the current year amount. Your state health insurance exchange or the marketplace, this is a one-stop shopping for individuals or even small businesses that are offering insurance to purchase these qualified health insurance plans. All the plans must cover the essential health benefits that, as described in the ACA, you have your basic categories of insurance benefits that are defined in the law. So they have to provide coverage for emergency, mental health, prescription, pediatric, and other services. You do have to keep in mind for those on immunoglobulin therapy that a plan does not necessarily have to provide coverage for that. So it's important when you're choosing a plan that you look into coverage for your IG therapy. With the marketplace, you can talk to somebody apply online or by phone. If you go online to healthcare.gov and you type in your state, it'll give you a list of all the different plans. You can compare rates and the benefits and the quality of the plans. And states are now starting to also employ organizations or people to help patients understand their choices, whether they're navigators or certified application counselors. So how does the ACA affect somebody who's over 65 and on Medicare? They have expanded free coverage for preventative services such as colon screenings, prostate, breast cancer. You have your free annual wellness check, and they are narrowing the donut hole in the Part D benefit until it's completely closed in 2020. Insurance plans. Every plan is different. What Medicare plan is right for someone? People need to keep in mind that your eligibility for certain Medicare plans depends on where you live. They can, it varies nationwide, state by state, sometimes within the counties of that state. So each state has developed what they call the SHIP program or the State Health Insurance Assistance Program. They have certified counselors to help Medicare beneficiaries determine what plans they're actually eligible for. You can then submit questions through them if you want information on exact coverage, and they can help you make some informed choices. They have websites and contact information for each state. If you go to our website in our patient insurance section, it's under assistance programs, and you can click on SHIP and just search your state and get the contact information. So there are many different types of Medicare. You have your Part A or hospitalization. You have your traditional Medicare, which is your Part B benefit. If you choose traditional, they're going to cover the 80%. You're going to require a secondary insurance or a gap policy that would pick up your 20%. Medicare Advantage plans, they're a Part C Medicare plan. These are sold as like an all-in-one. They're administered by private insurance companies. You might have Humana, Medicare Advantage, Cigna, Blue Cross, depending on what's offered in your area. I advise people to really look into the coverage for these because I've talked to so many patients who have purchased them thinking like, oh, well, this is my Medicare and my gap plan, but it's all in one. And a lot of times when it comes to immunoglobulin therapy coverage, I'm hearing that they only cover it at 80%. And once you have a Medicare Advantage plan, you are not eligible to get a secondary or gap plan. So you don't want to be stuck with that 20% coinsurance. So make sure that you investigate how they cover. Sometimes patients have told me, well, I called them and they told me it's going to be processed under the Part D benefit. That is not correct. Treatment is processed under the medical benefit with Medicare, whether it's traditional Medicare or you have an Advantage plan, it should be under the Part B benefit. However, and this is where it can get a little tricky, there are certain diagnoses that Medicare may not cover for immunoglobulin therapy. If you have an Advantage plan, you may get that coverage, but they're going to process it under Part D. And there's going to be a 20 or 30% coinsurance with it. So depending on your situation, I know you have a question, but depending on your situation, you have to carefully look at those Advantage plans. It's not necessarily an HMO. I mean, there may be types. Again, that's where you would go to your state counselors, the SHIP program, to find out what specifically is offered to you. What are you eligible for based on where you live? So the types of coverage that's offered in the marketplace, you have like four tiers. You have your bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. All these plans have the same benefits. They have the same caps on the, you know, annual out-of-pocket expenses. And the big difference is cost sharing. So, you know, many people choose, you know, they want to choose a bronze because the premium's so much lower, but yet that's the plan that's going to have the higher deductible, the higher coinsurance. To get an idea of true cost of coverage, you've got to look at what you're paying in premium and what you're going to be paying out of pocket for the year. So a lot of times with our patient community and others with rare diseases, you're going to benefit more with a gold or platinum plan, because you may be paying a little higher premium, but you're not getting hit with like a $6,000 upfront, you know, cost in January when you go to have your first treatment. The marketplace also offers subsidies. They're trying to make healthcare available, you know, and accessible to everyone. They're calculated on family size and income. And the Kaiser Family Foundation actually has a nice calculator if you go to kff.org, and you can check to see if you will qualify for a subsidy. Now you need to find the answers to your questions. You've gone online, you're looking at these plans, just the same as somebody who's, you know, getting open enrollment time with their employer and they're being offered three different plans. You have to compare them, and you have questions regarding the coverage. This information is not going to be readily available with the marketplace. You can submit questions through navigators or counselors, but they may not be able to get the specifics, especially when it comes to your treatment plan. So you can contact the insurance company directly to try to get through and see if you can get those answered questions or your questions answered. They may be able to give you more specifics about your coverage. So you have to contact the insurance company. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody. So you know you have to make the call. You know you're going to be on the phone for a while. You have got to be persistent. You don't have to accept their, well, we don't know, and we're not the people to talk to, and you need to find out. You need to kind of push on them, and you have to say, you know, I need to speak to your manager. I need to speak to your supervisor. Customer service representatives, they're just going to have the layout, your basic plan summary of benefits. They're not going to have any details to specialized treatments, medications, or anything like that. So insist on speaking to a supervisor or a manager. You know, you've got to get the information on your treatment coverage. Give them as much information that you can regarding that. They may not have the answer for you, but if you can give them your diagnosis code or give them your billing code, the name of the medication, even say, hey, look, this is a treatment that requires authorization. Is there somebody in your authorization department I can talk to? The more information you give them, they may be able to investigate a little bit and get you to the appropriate person who can answer your questions. Make sure that you document all of your calls. You need the names of the person you spoke to, the date, the time, what they told you. If they tell you something that you think doesn't sound right, or they're promising you the world, say, I want it in writing, they probably won't send it to you. But ask, document everything, because you know when you have to call back in 2 days, if you don't speak to the same person or even have their name to talk to another rep and say, well, this is what I was told, and you're going to get a completely different answer. Every time you call, you may get a different answer from a representative. So make sure that you're documenting everything. And most importantly, because somebody probably is going to have to investigate this for you, and they're going to have to get back to you. If you're not getting anywhere with them and all else fails, contact your state's insurance commissioner's office. They can give you information regarding the laws. They can answer some of your questions. You can file a formal complaint. You can also contact local representatives or even your state's general attorney's office. A lot of times they have office staff that will get involved in these and make some phone calls. I've talked to plenty of patients who have done that, and they call the insurance company, and then all of a sudden they have an answer in a day. So these resources are out there, and you need to use them. So you're going to make a decision on the plan. What exactly do you need to know before that purchase? You need to know what your out-of-pocket maximum is going to be. You need to know if you have a deductible. You need to know if that deductible is included in the out-of-pocket maximum or is it in addition to. You need to know whether your treatment, is it under the medical or the prescription plan? How's immunoglobulin covered? Is it coinsurance? Do I have a copay, which is just a flat amount? And most importantly, do you have options for site of care? Are they going to limit, you know, you may be receiving IVIG in your home setting and maybe the insurance plan does not cover it in the home setting. You want to make sure that you have an adequate network, whether it's for providers, specialty pharmacies, home health care companies, that site of care is very important. And do you have out-of-network benefits? You know, you may have a provider that you absolutely don't want to leave, and they may not be in your network. Do you have those out-of-network benefits that are at least going to cover a portion of that cost? So you have an out-of-pocket maximum limit. What expenses go towards that out-of-pocket max and what's not included? Any deductibles, co-payments, co-insurance for in-network benefits, that's all going to go towards your out-of-pocket maximum. What's not included are premiums, any services that are just not covered by the insurance company under the plan in general that will not apply to your out-of-pocket max, and out-of-network benefits. While it may be a great option to have out-of-network benefits, that cost still is not going to apply to your out-of-pocket. So if you need help comparing plans, IDF has the Patient Insurance Center. If you go to primaryimmune.org and under our services, it's Patient Insurance Center. There is a lot of information in there regarding updates to the ACA. We keep that updated. We have our health insurance toolkit. We also have that in the exhibit hall as well. It contains a lot of resources. It has actual comparison worksheets, so you can go through and calculate, you know, how many visits am I going to have a year, how many treatments, what medication do I take, and, you know, really do a thorough comparison of what your costs are going to be, and then determine what plan is going to best meet your needs. You can also go to the National Health Council's Putting Patients First. They have a calculator that helps to estimate your total out-of-pocket costs. So now you have an idea of what your costs are going to be for the year and how can you best manage these costs. Flexible spending accounts are a great way. They're a tax advantage savings plan that allows an employee to set aside a certain amount annually. It has just been increased to $2,550 that you can set aside for a year. And most plans or employers, and it's up to the employer, will allow you to roll over $500 of that amount. In the past, FSA accounts were a use-it-or-lose-it plan. That's really no longer the case. But $500 is the maximum amount that can be rolled over. Health savings accounts. This is another tax-advantaged medical savings plan, and it's offered mostly for those that are enrolled in a high-deductible plan. An individual can contribute more than you can in an FSA at $3,350 and then a family contribution of $6,650. Unlike the FSA, though, you can roll all funds over annually if it's not spent. Some people who don't have either account and then they may be getting a new plan try to determine, well, which plan's going to be best for me. The difference between the two is the health savings account, you can only use what you've contributed into it. So if you have an employer plan and you have an SHA account and they're taking those deductions out, you know, every pay period, you can only use what's actually been contributed. Where if you elect an FSA account and you have this annual max of $2,550, that amount is available to you in day one of your plan year. So some people choose that route when they have a deductible to meet. So it really depends on your unique situation. Other ways to manage costs, check with your manufacturer. They have assistance programs. Most give assistance if you become uninsured. Some of them have copay programs for certain products, so you can always give them a call to see what's available. Also, specialty pharmacies and home health care companies, they don't always advertise it, but most of them do have some type of assistance programs, or they'll do a reduced or sliding fee scale. IDF resources, go to our Patient Health Insurance Center. There's a lot of information in there. There's the toolkit. You can link directly to ask the IDF patient advocate, myself, we do the best to get the answers for you. Also, IDF Advocacy Center on the website. They have briefs and tools regarding ACA implementation, and they're continuously updated. If you need any other assistance or additional resources, you can contact us directly at 800. You can also go to our website, to the Ask IDF. It's a little button in the upper right-hand corner of our homepage, and you can submit any inquiries through there. You can call and ask for myself, or you can email me directly at this email address. And right now, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Junker.
Okay, so yesterday I broke the mic, I have to tell you, so I have to be very careful. Nicole said a lot of really important things. I'm going to say some of them again, and the reason I'm going to say them again is because they're really important. So if you hear something twice, perk up your ears, because it really is terribly important. So, she told you from an advocate perspective, I'm going to talk to you as a clinician, as a provider, all right? So you have some responsibilities. I would love to tell you that there's somebody out there who's going to take care of your insurance for you, that you're not going to have to do anything. You're going to sit back in your lounge chair sipping a pina colada, and your insurance is going to be totally taken care of. Just not going to happen. You've absolutely, positively got to take responsibility for your coverage. It's you who are in charge. And there are resources and people to help you, but ultimately, it's all about you. So you need to be informed. You need to know all of the things Nicole talked about with regard to what's covered, what's not covered, how it's covered, how much am I going to pay for what I'm getting. You need to be assertive. If you don't understand that stuff, and believe me, most of it's written in gobbledygook in a size 4 font, just so you can't read it, but you have to know what it says. And if you don't understand it, you've got to be assertive and find somebody who can help you understand it. And you need to keep asking questions until you do. And as Nicole said, you know, you talk to 3 people and get 4 different answers. You need to get the right answer. You also need to know your rights under the law. That, for example, if you're denied, what's your right when you've been denied? How many appeals can you make to a denial? There are laws in every state, and you need to know what those things are. You also need to be proactive. If you have your employer has changed their insurers, and on January 1, you have new insurance, January 2nd is not when you need to call your provider. And I will tell you, I dread the day I come in after New Year. It's like the phone is blinking, and I'm like, oh. Don't want to answer the phone because I'm going to get at least 4 calls from somebody. Oh, by the way, I have new insurance this morning. I'm going to need a pre-authorization. And I'm like, and you expect me to get that by when? Okay, you need to be proactive about that. You also need to not ignore communications from your insurance company. You know how when you pick up the mail in the mailbox and you sort the junk mail and you sort the magazines and somehow insurance stuff always gets in that junk mail pile? You need to read it. It's really usually something important, something about which you need to be informed. So there are questions that you need answers for. Again, this is repeating what Nicole said. How is your therapy covered? Does your company have a policy for immunoglobulin therapy? It is standard of care, but they don't have to pay for it. And I know when the marketplace opened up, I had several patients choose what they thought was a terrific plan, and then lo and behold, it didn't cover immunoglobulin, and all of a sudden they were facing a $75,000, $80,000, $90,000 bill a year for immunoglobulin therapy. Well, I can't pay that, and I don't think many of my patients can pay that either. All right? Does the insurance company require pre-authorization? Believe it or not, there's some out there that don't. Those are the ones I really love. Some have a very easy pre-authorization process. I can get you a federal employee Blue Cross Blue Shield authorization in 30 seconds on the telephone. If I go to United Healthcare, it may take me 2.5 weeks. Okay? You need to know what the pre-auth policy is and how frequently those pre-auths are required. At this point in time, I'm prescribing therapy for probably 450 patients. I can't keep all of them in my head and know that, you know, this one needs pre-auth here, this one needs pre-auth here. I have a mom with 2 sons, and she never fails to let me know 2 weeks ahead of time, oh, by the way, the boy's auth is up in 2 weeks. Can you work on the pre-auth for me in the next 2 weeks? And that's terrific. It's a wonderful thing. She knows exactly. She has it circled in red on her calendar exactly when the boy's pre-auth is due. Does your insurance mandate that you use a specific pharmacy or home health agency? And my question is, do you know that they can't? You have the right to choose your provider. They have the right not to pay for it, but you have the right to choose. All right? And if they have say that you have to use home health agency A and specialty pharmacy B, and you've heard terrible things about specialty pharmacy B, or you've had a very bad experience with specialty pharmacy B, and you don't want to use them, you don't have to. But you may be needing to pay more, or you may need to negotiate with your insurance company. Well, let me tell you, you want me to use B. Let me tell you all the things that B has done that are wrong, that really make it very difficult for me to work with them. And sometimes you can negotiate something with your insurance company, but you don't have to. They're not the arbitrators of you have to use exactly what we say we have to use. Their only thing is you have to use what we say we're going to use because that's what we're going to pay for. But you have the right to choose your providers. There are certain imperatives for you. There's information that you need, and this is a plug for the e-health record, whether you use the one through the IDF, or there are multiple other electronic health records on the website. Or if you're an old-fashioned girl like me, I love paper, and I have a file, and I have all of my documentation in a file, all right? You need to know who made your diagnosis, when that diagnosis was made, and what data was it based on, all right? I have patients that come to Johns Hopkins for a second opinion from all over the country, and I'll say, well, who made your diagnosis? You know, when was it made? Oh, it was done 23 years ago. I don't have any of that data. And the doctor's dead, or their office burned down, or I don't even know how to retrieve it. And I just want to say, well, how do we prove that you have the diagnosis that you say you have? Because I can't prove it if you're on immunoglobulin, your IgG level is normal, and your antibody levels are high. I can't prove it. That documentation is so incredibly critical. And your treatment history as well. That's terribly important when an insurance company tries to mandate that you use a particular product. All right, say the insurance company says you have to use immunoglobulin X. Well, you've had a terrible, terrible reaction to immunoglobulin X, and you don't want to use it. You have to have that treatment history documenting that bad reaction so that your provider can say, it's not safe to use this product for my patient. We're going to use this product. And that's how we'll get it paid for, because we have that data. But you need that data as well. You also need ongoing lab data. Most pre-authorizations, if they're done twice a year, they'll ask if you're on IVIG, what's the trough IgG level. If you're on sub-Q, you know there's no peak and trough, but they'll want to know what's the steady state IgG level. They'll want to know, has this kept the person healthy? Have they been in the hospital? Have they had wicked infections? That's important information that your provider has, but you need to have it as well. And you need that documentation. You need those records. Don't assume that anybody else has that data, because sometimes they don't. And again, it's the plug from using an electronic patient record or using paper and having a file box. I guarantee there are several people out here who have a 3-inch binder with all kinds of important data in it. All right, all of this information will help you with the inevitable insurance glitch, because I can guarantee that somewhere down the road, there's going to be a glitch. I actually looked up labor statistics before I was doing this talk, and today, people in the United States have an average of 12 jobs in their working career and move an average of 14 different times in their adult lives. So think about moving from state to state, changing jobs, changing insurers. Most people do this a lot. So You need the data, and you have to have it. All right? So let's talk prior authorizations for a minute. Normally, the prior authorization comes from your provider's office. Most insurance companies have a specific form requiring specific data. Most require a statement of medical necessity. Our statements of medical necessity are pretty straightforward. Mr. X has common variable immunodeficiency. This diagnosis was based on a hypogammaglobulinemia, parenthesis IgG 254 milligrams per deciliter, and a failure to respond to vaccine stimuli. And then there's going to be supporting data. The office notes the laboratory data. Sometimes if somebody's got a little bit of a fuzzy diagnosis or a newer genetic diagnosis, there may be a research article that we will submit that says, this is what the patient has, here's the data that supports immunoglobulin use for this particular diagnosis. And again, those tries and fails. You know, what products have they been on? What have they done well on? What have they not done well on? So that normally comes from the provider. Your responsibility is to collaborate with the provider. And if there's other specialists involved in the process, you need to pull them in and make sure that everybody has all of the records they need at a given time. So you need to save the communications, as I've said, make a file, use an electronic record. Make sure you have that data somewhere. Okay? If you have a self-funded plan or your employer has a self-funded plan, you need to talk to the human resources people at your company. You need to explain to them that you have this chronic diagnosis, that your therapy is what your therapy is, and that if you don't have this therapy, you could be at risk for some life-threatening infection. All right? You need to take the responsibility for this because by law, we cannot call your human resources person. And I'm going through this right now with a gentleman. It's taken me almost 3 weeks to get a pre-authorization, and it isn't even a new authorization. It's just a root change. He was on subcutaneous gamma globulin, and he really wants to go back to IV. They've already approved sub-Q gamma globulin, but they want a whole new pre-auth for IV. Does this make sense? No, it does not. Nevertheless, it's been going on for 2.5 weeks, and I have said to him, you have to go to your human resources person and get me the name of the person at your insurance company to whom your HR person speaks, because I can't call the HR person to get the name of that insurance person. And again, if you're going to have a change, if you've had a change, if you're going to have a change, you need to let us know preemptively so we can make that preemptive strike. Doing things after the fact is extraordinarily difficult. And you can get a bill for an extraordinary amount of money because your ducks weren't in a row, you didn't get the pre-auth before the drug was dispensed to you. So this is a chart that all of my patients have. All right, this actually is a real patient. She's a lovely lady who has had an IgG level of 320, which most of you I'm sure know is less than half of normal for an adult. It's an extraordinarily low level of IgG. All right? She, in May of 2014, her pneumococcal antibody levels were tested, and she had no protection to any pneumococcal serotypes. She got a dose of Pneumovax, the 23-valent pneumococcal vaccine. Then in July, we looked at her pneumococcal antibody levels again, and our rule of thumb is anything over 1.0 is protective. So of the 14 tested serotypes, this lady had protection to 1, 2, 3. Really not a very impressive response at all. Additionally, her tetanus and diphtheria antibodies levels were looked at. These are barely protective. Now, tetanus is a very, very strong antigen. We joke in my office, you have to be dead not to have a level of tetanus because you've gotten boosters over the course of time, and most people have some level of tetanus. All right, so we didn't let this go. We thought, oh, this is really bizarre that this lady had, you know, such a poor response to a Pneumovax. So we gave her a second pneumococcal vaccine. This is a different kind of a pneumococcal vaccine. This is a conjugate vaccine, the Prevnar. We've seen commercials for it on TV. And again, we waited 4 weeks, and we looked at her blood levels again, And she had a little bit more of a response, but certainly nothing that was going to indicate that she could make protective levels of antibody. We waited a little bit longer. 3 months later, we checked things again. What antibody she had made was essentially gone. She also, down here, made no response to the flu vaccine. So clearly, this is an unequivocal diagnosis of common variable immunodeficiency. I could put every immunologist that you've met over the past 3 days in this room. They would not need to lay eyes on this lady. They would say, oh, my goodness, common variable immunodeficiency. No shadow of a doubt. All right? Interesting, this lady, I don't know if she gambles or plays Russian roulette, I honestly don't know, has only had one bad infection in her life. One. No sinusitis, nothing. She had a wicked pneumonia in the springtime and has just dodged bullets her entire life, because I'm assuming that her IgG has been this low for a significant amount of time. She had one pneumonia, and somebody thought, this is a really bad pneumonia in a healthy lady. And so I'm going to draw immunoglobulins, and their teeth dropped on the floor when they drew these levels. Yeah, it's an interesting story, but I put it up for a reason. Anyway, this lady has Cigna Insurance, and we sent all of the data to Cigna. As I said, this was totally unequivocal. And a new medical person at Cigna denied her gamma globulin. We were like, what? How is this even conceivably possible? Well, the Cigna policy for gamma globulin says that you have to have a history of infections. This lady had no history of infections. Cigna wanted her to have infections, wanted her to get sick to demonstrate that she needed gamma globulin. The medical director said, this is my policy. I can't approve this. Fortunately, we have a history with Cigna at Johns Hopkins, and I have the medical director's phone number on speed dial in my phone. And I called her up and I said, Dr. La La La. And she's like, this is a Hopkins patient? I'm like, yes, ma'am. And she went back to the doctor and said, don't you know that if somebody comes to us from Hopkins, they've made that diagnosis and this is completely appropriate. And she overturned her medical director. All right, but we had that in. But according to the Cigna policy, this lady doesn't need gamma globulin. So this is the documentation that you need. And my patients all have a spreadsheet like this. Documents when they've gotten vaccines, when they've had lab testing done, what the results of those lab tests were. And this kind of a spreadsheet is a whole lot easier than having 15 pieces of paper with lab reports on it. Now, sometimes they want the real data, but this spreadsheet normally gets us exactly what we want. And this is the kind of thing that you really need to have. All right? Eventually, there's going to be a denial. And my friend gave me this slide. And no, it's not a river in Egypt, but sometimes I think a denial is. It's just as obscure and just as deep. But when you get a denial, there are resources. You can appeal a denial. All right? The important thing about appealing a denial is that you follow the instructions on the denial letter. The denial letter will say you have the right to appeal this decision and you need to do steps 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Don't try to do them 3, 4, 2, 1. Do them 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Follow that letter, those instructions exactly. All right? We'll appeal for you and we will totally talk to a medical director. I laughingly say I have the Cigna medical director and my cell phone. I do, and I have other insurance people's numbers too, and generally we've demonstrated that we don't make diagnoses without the appropriate data. So all of this is possible, but if you have that information, you can help with this appeal and get it done. So some really, really good ideas, again, are electronic patient records. Case managers are wonderful. If you have a chronic disease and your insurance company has case managers, take advantage. Those people can help you get all of the people together so that people are prescribing. And so when you have bills from all different people, they can help you get it all in a neat package. Case managers can be terrific. Okay? You have to take responsibility for your insurance coverage. Nobody's going to do it for you. I had a lady who had an insurance plan, And all of a sudden, the insurance plan wiped Johns Hopkins out. We were no longer a provider under that insurance plan. So her infusions weren't paid for. She couldn't come to see us for her semi-annual doctor's appointments. And all she did was wring her hands and cry and wanted somebody to fix it for her. And person after person explained to this lady, who was a reasonable adult, that nobody could fix it for her. She was going to have to do the legwork. She was going to have to spend time on the telephone and get this fixed. We'd work for her and with her, but we couldn't do it for her. And it took quite a amount of time, and she was off therapy for a while because she couldn't get it together. So you don't want that to happen to you, so take that responsibility. Know what's going on so that you can have all of your duckies in a row.